Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. In our first case this morning, 2023-0213, in the matter of the State of Ohio versus Kenneth Grad. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Ferrara. Good morning.
I'm here today with Vito Gianola of the Ohio Innocence Network. He won't be arguing today, but he'll be joining me at counsel's table. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court. Ohio defendants deserve a chance to present evidence in a hearing, scientific evidence, on a motion for leave to file a motion for a new trial, where that evidence would promise to change the outcome of trial. And second, they can base that evidence, that scientific evidence, can be based on old theories. In this case, Mr. Grad was prosecuted based on theories that existed at the time. Those theories have developed. How defendants should be able to take advantage of those theories and be able to argue them, these new discoveries, in a hearing, and that's where they can make their case. They need to get a chance to do so. Mr. Grad didn't get a chance. His case was denied, his motion was denied, despite the fact that he had some empirical evidence that the standards for diagnosing this sort of disease here that was in question, EDS and OI, had changed over time. And changed in a radical way. There were new genes to discover, new genes to search for in a diagnosis. The diagnosis standards have changed. And a condition, the state's witness said, could not exist at all, did exist in a child born in the 2021 study presented in this case.
So this is really more to do with a hearing for why he was unavoidably prevented. So there's the initial step, and the court denied a hearing on even that initial step, correct?
That's correct. So, you know, there is that first step that needs to happen, right? And in science-laden cases like this, that first hearing is almost, you know, it's so critical for defendants. So he has to be able to establish that he was unavoidably prevented from reviewing or have ever been finding this kind of evidence.
Well, and does he have to establish that it's new evidence?
And yes, in that hearing, he would have to establish...
To get to that hearing, what does he have to show initially?
Could you repeat the question, please?
To get to the hearing, to the first hearing.
He needs to make a prima facie showing that the evidence is new.
But does he have to show that it's... So it has to be new evidence. He has to establish that.
He has to establish a prima facie showing to get that hearing, and that would include something like State versus Peels, where he has to show that the evidence is chronologically new, right? It came after trial. Two, he didn't control it. So in this instance, it was a scientific study. And three, that that ultimately it proposes to change the outcome of trial, right? We have to at least have some sort of proposition that there'll be a change.
So. Not just any new evidence will suffice? Any new scientific study that comes out?
Not any new scientific study, and I can acknowledge that. I mean, we have to make some proposition that the science or diagnosis has changed in a science-laden case. And so, you know, trial courts can serve as gatekeepers, but this is too tight here, and Ohio case law is going towards... It's just been so tight that they haven't been giving defendants the chance to establish that their evidence is newly discovered or that it could change a case. And so, you know, we have the state of Ohio citing some case law here, and I'm glad they did, okay, because the Ninth District cited it as well. Stein, State versus Stein, this vein of case law on shaken baby syndrome. Chambers, okay, what is the other one? Hoover Moore. All those cases show an arc of discovery in that particular area of science, right? And you could see the timeline develop as you look at each of the cases in chronological order. You can see that the science has evolved over time until you get to State versus Butts. in which the standards for science had changed and diagnosis of SBS had changed, where State versus Butts, the 10th district finally said, look, this is a change in science in 2018, a consensus change that could change the outcome of this case, and it's okay to reverse this case or send it back for a new trial based on that consensus change. And here it is. What's the difference between Butts and those three prior cases? The three prior cases never held a hearing. Those defendants were shouting from the rooftops to get a hearing and saying, look, the science has changed since the nine years I've been incarcerated.
So to go back to Justice Donnelly's question, you agree that it's not any new science evidence. So what is it? What's that marker? Is it a consensus change? And how would you define that?
I would define it as evidence that changes that particular case. Now, it could be a consensus change in science, right? A trial court has to look at the evidence that was presented at that trial to create a conviction and the evidence available to the defendant at the time. I mean, there has to be an examination of that. It just happens.
Okay, so but you're driving it back to the case, not back to the science.
Well, in science-laden cases, it's both.
Well, what has to change in the science? What's the metric?
The metric is it has to have a significant chance of changing the outcome of trial. I mean, it'll change on a case-by-case basis, Your Honor. I mean, you look at the cases, you look at State versus Butts, all right? The trial court granted a new trial despite the same defense expert being presented on the motion for a new trial. It was the same defense expert. He came back and his testimony had changed. It improved because the science had improved.
So what specifically makes this not consistent with the first study? Why isn't it cumulative?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What's the difference between the new science in the first study in the court and in the case?
Oh, in this particular case? In this case, in 2021, Dr. Hollick discovered a baby in utero with 23 fractures, right? So the mode of causation that was alleged in this case could not have happened to that child because the baby was in utero, okay? And so the baby also tested negative for two genes in which WG tested negative for, but still had these conditions, something that Dr. Steiner in this case stated was medically impossible. And so for us, we would like a hearing with the trial court to say, well, first of all, Mr. Grad could not have known of this baby in 2021 and could not have known of its condition and did not know of the 20 genes that Dr. Hollick has discovered that relate to bone fragility in infants, six of which he pinpointed seem to have impacted that particular case. And that's just among the other things he cited. I mean, Dr. Hollick had 26 footnotes in that case, four of which predated trial. The rest were all postdated Mr. Grad's trial. All right. And these footnotes indicated a change in science that Dr. Hollick alluded to in his affidavit, including a 2017 international consensus on diagnosing Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
What if after conviction there are nine studies that support the conviction and one that doesn't?
Yes.
Is that enough?
Well, Judge, it's a great question for a hearing.
That's
right?
What I'm asking.
That's right. It's a great question for a hearing. I can tell you this. If you have courts of appeals, okay, that are doing what they're doing now, all right, they'll spin themselves in circles trying to determine that by looking at the case law and not at the case in which the litigants are arguing. And if the other problem I'm trying to express...
Well, let me change it. Let's say it's 99-1. Is that enough?
Once you get into determining weight, you have to do it at a hearing. These courts
even
can...
Even if it's an outlier.
Even if a new trial hearing comes in and you get that new trial hearing, you still have to establish the weight of your evidence. And the weight of scientific evidence is something that needs to be measured in a hearing with with evidence and a process. If you don't do that, you get the kind of opinions that come out in State versus Stein and State versus Chambers. And Chambers' ultimate conclusion is something, you know, is something that, that the Ninth District and Grad glommed onto, right? His ultimate conclusion was, well, these are based on old theories, this scientific discovery. So you can't use that in a motion for a new trial. That's an absurdity. Of course you can use new theories and new scientific discoveries as evidence. It happens all the time.
You simply have to compare that to Criminal Rule 33, correct?
Yeah, this would
with
be
the six standards as far as what's new evidence.
Yes. I mean, you're applying that in a way, and for science-laden cases like this, a lot of that analysis will happen in that hearing about whether the evidence is new.
So I want to ask you, do you agree with the conclusion of the 10th District in State v. Gavin that when we're talking about a motion for a new trial, if the documents on their face from the defendant support the defendant's claim that the discovery of the evidence was unavoidably delayed, that the trial court must hold a hearing to determine whether there is clear and convincing evidence of the unavoidable delay? Do you agree with the clear and convincing evidence standard that the 10th District is positing?
Yes, and mostly I agree also, with the fact that a hearing is mandatory once prima facie evidence is presented. I mean, because, you know, there has to be some stage in which a litigant gets to present that evidence and show its weight, right? Otherwise, you get a denial like we have in here, in this case, where my client didn't get a chance to show the weight of the evidence, but the judgment was against the weight of the evidence. I mean, the ultimate conclusion was, well, these are based on old theories, and so the studies aren't good enough. And that is a value judgment. That is
so
a value judgment.
To borrow a tagline from former Justice O'Donnell, what is it you want the court to write? What exactly is the rule that you want the court to write?
Well, in science-laden cases particularly, when a defendant presents prima facie evidence on a motion for leave that there's newly discovered evidence that could have a significant impact at trial, they should receive a hearing on that evidence, whether it's newly discovered, before a trial court can deny the motion for leave.
Even if it's a scintilla?
Say again?
Even if it's a scintilla of new evidence?
No, not if it's a scintilla, Your Honor. I acknowledge trial courts have to make some basic value judgment. You know, if they're receiving the evidence, they can't just say, oh, it's a study, let's get this hearing started. I acknowledge that. And there has to be some basic value judgment about the proposition. And in this case, you know, that can happen. That could have happened, and there could have been a hearing about the newness of the evidence, and it just didn't happen. And that's been consistent now across Stein, Chambers, and Hoover Moore. Those cases never featured a hearing. And so those cases basically sounded like an echo chamber of each other, right? Chambers comes to its conclusion based on State versus Stein. But Chambers was presented different evidence than in State versus Stein. Newer evidence, because State versus Stein was decided 4 years, 5 years prior. And in fact, what's funny is that perhaps tragic, is that Chambers and Butts had similar evidence about shaken baby syndrome. But the Butts court, right, came to a conclusion that was different. And you see that opinion that's written out. It's flush with detail from the hearing. And that's the kind of appellate opinion that benefits Ohio litigants, that benefits jurists, that benefits practitioners, right? I mean, you have an appellate record that's written out in depth about the development of SBS. Compare that to the other cases. It's totally devoid. I mean, the record in those cases is not developed. And it's a shame because it's ruining defendants' chances to get a fair hearing and to advance their own science.
You're well into rebuttal.
Oh, I see that. Well, thank you. I'll take the rest of the time on rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Saranik. My understanding is you've agreed to allow Mr. Geiser to also participate, but do you have an established time split?
Yes, I'd like 5 minutes to go to the attorney general.
Please come forward. Good morning. Thank you.
Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. The trial court was correct to deny Mr. Grad's motion for leave to file a motion for new trial without holding a hearing. And the Ninth District Court of Appeals, applying an abuse of discretion standard of review, was correct to affirm the trial court's decision. Because the scientific evidence that Grad characterizes as newly discovered is cumulative to the evidence known to him at his 2014 trial.
But didn't the state's witness testify it was impossible that the bone disease that Mr. Grad asserted played a role and it later discovered played a role to the infant and then is later discovered through this evidence it is possible? That totally contradicts the state's position?
Yes, Your Honor. There is quite a difference there in scientific studies. However, the studies that Mr. Grad is looking at are cumulative evidence to the studies or to the experts that he could have presented at trial.
But, counsel, do they contradict that statement that it was impossible? Do these studies contradict that it was impossible?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if the studies exactly contradict that it was possible, but actually the one study does contradict it. I apologize. There was not enough evidence at the time to show that it was impossible, or I'm sorry, that it was possible to have a baby in utero with fractures.
So wouldn't at a hearing both the appellant and the state be able to cross-examine and then make a determination by looking at what was told to the jury about the state's theory and make that critical determination whether their theory has been undermined or maybe possibly not? And wouldn't it be better to have this fleshed out at a hearing?
Your Honor, the decision to hold a hearing is well within the trial court's discretion.
So if a study directly contradicts the state's theory, and like I said before, there's 9 others that support it since conviction, that one doesn't matter. Is that right?
It's not that it doesn't matter, Your Honor. It's just that
It's not enough to get a new hearing?
It's not enough when we're looking at, as the appellant said, a consensus change. Because in that case, there's 9 studies or 99 studies that say that certain evidence is possible. And the evidence here was written by the same experts that Mr. Grad could have had testify at trial, and he chose not to call those experts.
Should it matter about the tests that were requested then, back then, were so expensive, and now at what, 10 times less?
Yes, Your Honor. The testing is important, but Mr. Grad did not choose to raise the issue of testing on direct appeal, and so it is not really before this court in order to determine that.
And what is the overarching, I guess, goal of the state? I think the states would be interested in being sure justice was meted out here. What would be the state's interest in upholding the decision not to have a hearing when there could be evidence here that proves this person is innocent of the crime for which he's been convicted?
The state's position, Your Honor, is that Criminal Rule 33B is working just fine, that there's no issues with it, and the fact that Mr. Grad could have chosen to have these experts testify and did not is trial strategy. It was within the discretion of trial counsel, and so there was no reason to review that decision now.
If you look at the structure of proof then versus now, then the structure was essentially eliminate any biological reason, and then it must be, for instance, shaken baby syndrome. now, because of genome testing being affordable, that's not necessarily the approach, or there's more to the approach than there was before. Isn't that new evidence in and of itself that would surpass the waiver issue that you made?
Your Honor, a test itself is not new evidence. The results of the test would be new evidence, but there
haven't. The state said it couldn't afford to do that test and said, we think we've proved it well enough. Now the state could afford to do it. Aren't we all here for the truth?
Of course we are, Your Honor. There is a significant issue when it comes to the cost of a test and how much it is, but hypothetical evidence that could exist is not the same as newly discovered evidence that does exist.
I understand, but when you go back to the trial, there wasn't any corroborative or circumstantial kind of testimony about maybe what Mr. Grad did, what someone observed him do. All it was the medical testimony, and that's all that was used to convict him.
Your Honor, there was also testimony by the adoptive mother.
That's correct. Thank you. Yes, can you talk about that?
Yes, Your Honor. The adoptive mother testified that the baby did not suffer any fractures from the time that he was placed into her custody in January of 2009 to the time of trial in December 2014. And if the baby did indeed have some sort of brittle bone disorder, you would expect that the baby would continue to have fractures during that time.
Thank you.
The 2016, 2017, 2019, and 2021 studies are authored or co-authored by Dr. Hollick and Dr. Ayoub, both of whom could have testified at trial if Grad had chosen to call them as witnesses. In fact, he did not call any experts as witnesses for the defense, even though two of them were in the courthouse and ready to testify. And in addition, the state's experts were thoroughly cross-examined on what other tests could have been performed, diseases that the child could have had, and whether there were even fractures at all. And the jury was aware that there were other tests that had not been done on the child for possible other disorders or diseases, but they chose to convict Grad regardless based on the evidence presented at trial. Are there any more questions, Your Honors?
On the consensus issue, what if there are 10 studies post-conviction and 4 contradict the state's position? Is that enough of a consensus for a hearing?
There would be more of a position to hold a hearing in that instance, Your Honor.
Well, is it an abuse of discretion not to? That was your statement.
No, it's within the trial court's discretion to hold that hearing.
So let's say there's 9 out of 10 studies contradicting the state's viewpoint from the earlier trial. If there's one supporting it, isn't that abused within the court's discretion then?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. The trial court dealt with the matter at trial. It's in a better position to handle the motion to file a new trial based on
motion for leave. We're talking about a hearing on whether they can file a motion for new trial, right? We're not talking about are they entitled to a new trial.
Correct. Right?
We're talking about a hearing on a motion asking for leave to file a motion for new trial.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And 9 of the new studies contradict the state's position, and 1 supports it. Can a trial court just say, nah, it's still consistent, I'm not going to hold a hearing?
The trial court does have that discretionary power, Your Honor, to determine the evidence and what's been cumulative, what they've seen so far, and what was seen at trial, and determine whether there was a new evidence that was discovered.
Well, I'm assuming all 10 studies are new.
Okay.
Post-conviction.
I see that I'm running into my time for the Attorney General. May I finish?
Yes.
The studies would show that there is a possibility that the evidence could be different, but it still might not be a scientific consensus in the change of the theories. There have been cases where there have been studies that appear to support the defense's position, as in State v. Butts, which we believe was correct application of the law, but the 10th District held that there was a quantum leap in the science, and we don't believe that that was the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Geiser.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, Elliot Geiser for the Attorney General. At bottom, Grad regrets that his counsel relied on cross-examination instead of calling the defense experts available and known to him in 2014. Grad is seeking a new trial with a new defense strategy using the same evidence from 2014. So this case offers no occasion to consider the significance of new scientific evidence under Rule 33, and the court should decline the invitation to relax established principles of Rule 33 for new evidence so that Grad can try a new trial strategy.
You're saying that the new studies are the same evidence? Is that what you're saying?
They're based on precisely the same theory that was heard through cross-examination and available at the time had those experts testified.
They reached the same conclusions?
They reached the same conclusion, yes.
All of them?
Yeah, correct, Your Honor. The 2021 study that involved one case example of an in utero infant that had 23 fractures, the affidavit attached to the motion for a new trial by Dr. Hollick said that that only confirmed what he would have testified about in 2014. And so the jury could have heard precisely the same argument that it was not impossible, and in fact did hear evidence that there were tests that could have been run that had not been run. But the jury also heard evidence, as my able co-counsel described, that once WG, the victim, was in the care of the adoptive parents, there were no additional fractures whatsoever.
But in 2021, he wouldn't have testified that they had actually discovered a child in utero with broken bones. He would just say that it was possible, correct?
Well, in 2014, yeah, he could have made the argument, Your Honor, that it was possible, and he would have had evidence to substantiate that, including the footnotes that are cited in that 2021 article.
So the 2021 article said that there was in utero there were fractures?
Yes.
That had been discovered in the past?
Well, it talked about how this serves to confirm the theory that he has been advancing throughout his career.
So it went from theory to actuality by 2021, correct?
Well, so the testimony that the jury heard, including from the state's expert.
It was just a yes or a no question. It went from theory to actuality with the 2021 study. 2014, it was a theory. 2021, it was an actuality.
It was a theory in both instances, Your Honor. There is additional evidence, yes, but that evidence is cumulative because it shows precisely the same point that was raised through cross-examination at Mr.
Wouldn't that have affected wouldn't that have affected the jury's weight that it gave to any of the evidence, or even in some of the questions on cross-examination? How can you say it's the same?
It's the same point. Cumulative evidence is evidence that tends to show the exact same point that the trial.
I know what cumulative evidence is, but it's not. You still haven't told me. You're saying that when it actually happened versus when it was a theory, that there's no substantial difference.
There's no substantial difference between the point that the expert would have testified to and no substantial difference between the cross-examination of the state's expert.
Counsel, wouldn't you be able to make these points more clear? All the other side's asking for is a hearing, and they could put up these witnesses, they could testify under oath, you could cross-examine them, and then you could make, at the close of that hearing, the same argument. You could say, compare what was said here in the trial, what was said during closing argument, and you could make the same thing, and then you'd probably have more clear evidence of what you're saying. That, they're only asking for a hearing. What's the objection to a hearing?
The objection is, Your Honor, that this is an unworkable rule. Every single time a new study is published that purports to show some sort of new scientific evidence cannot entitle every single defendant to a new hearing.
And the other side concedes that fact. You'd have to convince a judge that there's something worth exploring, that, like in Botts, that a sea change had taken place, something that undermined the theory of guilt that was presented. And we know that, for instance, in fire investigation, we know that the science has advanced unbelievably. You can't just go into a courtroom and have a fire investigator say, it started here because I say it started here, right? We know that science has advanced. So don't we need to have hearings to make this fact established or not?
Well, Your Honor, I see that my time has expired, my answer. The science in arson, we do think, would likely meet the quantum leap language accurately and colorfully described in the State versus Butts case. We think it's a much more challenging case involving other kinds of evidence. And even in State versus Butts, the court thought that there was a scientific consensus that had changed with respect to shaken baby syndrome, although some of the evidence that they cited actually undermines some of those conclusions. So while we think that Butts accurately described the standard, quantum leap, hearing. No quantum leap, as is the case for Mr. Grad, no hearing is necessary because on the face of the evidence, it is not new.
So is that the rule that we write? Absent a quantum leap, no hearing?
We think that if the court were to adopt that language, that would be satisfactory, but it wouldn't help Mr. Grad, in this particular case, obtain a hearing, Chief Justice.
So you would like that language, but is there other language?
Well,
what should we write?
I think that the court could either write something on the order of, unless the evidence shows a sea change or a quantum leap, it's fully within the discretion of courts, trial courts, not to hold hearings. And that evidence is not new if it was available or could have been discovered with reasonable diligence by the defendant at the time of the trial, as is the case here.
Well, is new based on that, or is new based on chronological time, as your friend on the other side suggested?
Well, Chief Justice, we think that new is an inherently comparative endeavor for the trial court under Rule 33B's text. You have to look at unavoidable prevention, and that requires a mixed question of law and fact examination of what was or could have been presented at the time of trial, and then compare that to what is being propounded as new evidence to determine whether or not it's a quantum leap or is it just something that postdates trial. Mere postdating trial cannot be the standard by which a hearing would occur. That would be, we think, an unworkable rule.
You mentioned unavoidable delay being mixed fact and law, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Wouldn't that then call for a hearing?
Well, a mixed question of law, in fact, is the reason that the standard of review is the abuse of discretion. So whether or not it calls for a hearing can be determined based on the face of the affidavit submitted here, which Mr. Grad's affidavit said, this evidence only confirms what I knew and would have testified to at 2014. And so that averment makes this, I think, an easy case.
Makes it not, and your argument is it's not new.
It's not new, correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Ferrara, you have a minute and 38 seconds left.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. I'll be brief. Well, I will say that there's some same argument that Mr. Grad was not guilty. I would agree. We're continuing to argue that, okay? But the evidence that we've come up with now is empirical, and it impugns the state's case.
What about the state's position that you had information? All of this is basically cumulative. You had it at the time of trial, but counsel decided not to present it.
It's all water under the bridge, Your Honor, at this point, because really the evidence at trial is what it is. I mean, I can't change it right now, but I can tell the trial court that the science has changed. What happened was the state of Ohio based their prosecution on a process of elimination theory. There was no non-medical evidence in this case, none. It was entirely based on this very narrow universe of science.
What about the adoptive mother's statements that the baby suffered no more fractures in her care.
That's a piece of evidence. I'd be happy to argue that in a hearing with my expert.
But you said there was no other evidence other than this elimination theory.
Well, that's right. I'm sorry. It was a scintilla of evidence in addition. And I would say our studies, the 2019 study and the 2016 study, contradict that entirely as well. And that, again, doesn't account for the newness of the 2021 study. And what's the language that shows it's new? Right on the first page in the abstract. This is the first reported case of in utero fractures that was confirmed by X-ray after birth. And then the other statement that they say is, therefore, we have identified a new genetic cause for in utero fractures.
So scientific.
That's fascinating. It's so, definitely new.
Right. So scientifically, at least what should be explored, you're saying, is even though, let's say, the adoptive mother's testimony that no other fractures occurred might be absolutely true, that doesn't mean that the fractures that the infant sustained when Mr. Grad was prosecuted could not have happened in utero or through some other.
That's correct, right? Okay. And so, and I see that I'm out of time. I'm in the red. So if I could conclude, but the state of Ohio is impugning that fact, right? Impugning our evidence right now, and all of those judgments that we're trying to make are weight judgments. You know, what is the value of this over time? Are we on the same arc as State versus Butts, where if you start looking at the cases in chronological order from State versus Stein forward to State versus Butts and see that arc in SBS science has changed, where are we at on that continuum? Are we where Mr. Stein was? Mr. Stein tried to get his evidence heard as the arc was changing, as the science was changing, and he couldn't even get a hearing. So it's not so much that defendants want to open the floodgates. They want to open the courthouse door and come in and show their new scientific evidence, especially when it's empirical, it's dispositive, all right, even if it's based on old theories from trial. I ask this court to follow the example set by the 10th District in State versus Butts. It's a wonderful opinion, wonderfully written, and reject the kind of opinions and the kind of case law that comes out of cases like State versus Chambers, State versus Stein. This court can do that and improve for Ohio defendants the results on motions for leave and the fairness of the system. Thank you.
Thank you. Take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court.